The Secret World Chronicle, a podcast novel series written by Mercedes Lackey, Cody Martin, Dennis Lee, and Veronica Jaguer. Presenting Season 7, Run Silent, Run Deep. Fire on the Mountain, Part 2. Written by Mercedes Lackey, Cody Martin, and Dennis Lee. Motu and Matai were providing security on the door, with one of Operative Victrix's cams stuck right outside it, scanning for threats. The room had been easy to take. There were only 4 Nazis in it, after all, and they didn't have power armor in this part of the facility. What had been hard was leaving one of them alive and relatively unscathed. Bulwark had taken care of that. It's amazing what a well-placed rifle butt will do for a man's ability to stay conscious. Bulwark stared for a moment at the unconscious Thulian, then at Genie. His jaw tensed.
Genie,
he gestured to the body.
This would be your job.
Genie's eyes narrowed. He had to wonder, was Bulwark setting him up as a target? He thought he knew Gardner now. Thought hell trusted him. This is going to play merry hell with my radar, he bitched, then set about stripping the unconscious Thulian. Roughing in a face, just taking the face he was wearing and giving it a slightly more Thulian cast, didn't involve having to rip it off, and he didn't see any good reason to do a full copy of the guy in his tighty-whities on the floor. While the others scuttled around setting charges, he sat back on the floor, staring at one of Magic Girl's wizard cams, while she fed the image of his own face back to his retinas. Boy, was that trippy. The eye slits were longer, the nose was more of a suggestion than a real nose, and the nostrils were slits. Damn near no upper lip, and a thin, long lower one. Skin a jaundiced yellow. And Victrix had supplied him with something to replicate the orange cinnamon smell of the Thulians. He sprayed himself down with her concoction. He stood up.
Ready for my close-up.
Bulwark gave him a long stare.
That'll do.
When everyone was ready, Genie led the way. The team stayed several paces behind him, allowing him to go around corners and into hallways first. This paid off when Victrix warned them, "Info one, little busy here," and they went on ahead because the clock was ticking. She was juggling 2 infiltration teams in an enemy base that was buzzing with activity, as well as helping coordinate comms and intelligence for the ground battle raging above. It was understandable. Red was able to hide his surprise when he rounded a corner and almost bowled over a Thulian. The Nazi spilled what looked like a stack of manuals, cursing loudly in German.
"Entschuldigen mir bitte, überlautnet," Red bleated, then groveled. "Das tut mir sehr leid."
He bent down as if to pick up the manuals, then shot up like an uncoiled spring, catching the Nazi under the chin with his hardened fist. The Thulian went down like a felled tree. Red knelt down to throw the Nazi over his shoulder, and then behind a stack of crates in a small alcove.
"When did you start learning German?" Motu asked.
"When I needed to."
The team moved faster. They didn't run into any more Thulians along the way, so they actually arrived ahead of schedule. Red placed his back against the wall just outside of the supposed command and control room for the entire headquarters. He could hear a lot of movement and talking inside.
"Looks like the good guys upstairs are keeping them busy. Since we're not dead, they haven't figured out our angle yet."
"That's an awful lot of talking going on in there, and what I don't like is they don't sound panicked."
That was Victrix in his ear.
"Let me boost it."
Red's German wasn't good enough for him to make out what the rapid-fire conversation was all about, but Victrix could.
"Oh, bloody hell."
Her voice took on that flat tone that told him they were probably in trouble.
"Listen up, peeps. What they just said is that they aren't worried, that they've only engaged about a 20th of their force out there, and it was the second stringers at best. And that now that we've made them, they are on the schedule to pack up and move the rest to a new base by this time tomorrow. There's several hundred of the bastards outside. You do the math."
"That doesn't change the mission,"
Bulwark said firmly.
"If anything, this makes it more critical."
"That's a big 10-4. Just wanted you guys to know what's riding on it. Already relayed the intel. Artie, give me an eye, please."
Genie pulled one of the eyes out of a pouch and held it in the palm of his hand.
The weird little dingus that looked like something out of a steampunk illustration slowly levitated up, then winked out of sight. He waited while she scouted with it.
"They aren't even the least bit alert. We can do this the easy way," she said. "Showtime, Genie."
Red took a limpet from Motu and stuck a band-aid on it. The moment the adhesive strip went down, the limpet faded from view. The band-aid happened to have a drop of Victrix's own blood on it, which was kind of creepy, actually, but gave her spell contact. Funny that she entrusted that packet of band-aids to him. He walked in, trying to look as if he was there to get something, spotted a warmer full of empty coffee pots, and headed for them. He was in the middle of what could have been any big command and control center he'd ever seen. Desks, lots of monitors, that skewed Thulian control stuff, and odd-shaped keyboards and a few sleeves, and... they drank coffee?
"Fresh coffee?"
he asked one of the men at the nearest desk as he picked up pots and left the limpet. He nodded.
"Javold, Capitan. Bit, nach schnell."
Red walked out just as calmly, taking up his position next to the door. Matai handed him his rifle, and he checked the chamber to make sure it had a round in it. Bulwark nodded to him. Retrieving a small control with a nice, shiny red button on it, he said,
"Ready?"
He waited for the nod. Thought of amethyst.
"Ignition."
He depressed the button, and a too loud explosion rocked the hallway. Not wasting precious seconds, Red pocketed the control, bringing his rifle up. The team filed in behind him. The entire control room was full of smoke, with several small fires started where the distraction device had caught combustibles. The Thulians were all on the floor and dazed, some that were the closest to the blast being completely unconscious. The team took them down easily, gunfire and rifle strikes finishing off any resistance. Once Bulwark was certain that the room was clear, he slung his rifle and walked over to what he had been briefed on, specifically a mainframe computer. The eye unstealthed. It whizzed over the control areas, then stopped. Some sort of plug popped out of its rear, and it backed into a slot. Vix sighed with satisfaction in his ear.
"Bingo. Come to Mama."
While he busied himself with that and the two brothers providing security on the door, Red and Silent Knight began to gather up any physical evidence they could. Hard copy, maps and manuals mostly.
"How we doing, Victrix?"
Red had used his HUD to switch over to a direct line with her.
"It's getting ugly outside. JM's commies are on track so far. I gave them the bad news, so the Reds on Infill 2 are trying to plant the rest of their ordnance for the biggest possible boom. Good news, the Nazis never figured on anyone unfriendly getting to this computer station, so there's no firewalls, no ice, and no interference."
"So what are you waiting for? Labor Day?"
"May Day, Bonehead. Hush, I'm downloading as fast as the connection will let me. Silly me, I didn't have you pack a T1 line."
In spite of everything going on, he almost grinned. Put her in her safe spot, and damn if she didn't have Moxie. Once the team was done, Bulwark gave them the signal to get ready to move. He unstrapped his backpack. It was his mission-specific loadout, and one that he was going to particularly enjoy getting rid of. Not because it was heavy, but because of what it would do.
"Operative Victrix, be ready to initiate the infestation once we're safely away. On your word, we'll activate the package."
"Roger. I'm giving them a dose of their own worm, and I think I can get it outside this complex."
"Let's be a nuisance. Double time, everyone."
The team jogged out of the command room, running down the hallways that Vicky told them to. They managed to avoid any Thulians, but that wouldn't last.
"Fly, my little Virai, fly!"
The lights began to flicker almost instantly. The vibration in the floors and walls took on a ragged edge. Then both lights and vibration cut out.
"Murdoch, this is Bulwark. Light the match."
With that, Bulwark pressed a button on his belt controller. The lights flickered, then cut out.
"Murdoch, this is Bulwark,"
came the voice in his ear.
"Light the match."
There was a muted whoomp, and the floor shook slightly. The HUD flipped over to night vision mode, triggered no doubt by Vicky. The team had IR illuminators on their shoulders to make up for the lack of any ambient light. John looked over to Untermensch, the Russian gleaming dully in the green glow of NV.
"I've been waiting all day to do this."
He flipped the safety cover off of the detonator and depressed the button. A half dozen similar explosions shook the entire base. The floors, walls, ceiling all began to damn near hum with the vibration of something deep inside of the base going very, very wrong. The team was in what John thought was the biggest room he had ever seen indoors. It was impossibly big, given the dimensions of the mountain and how deep they were supposed to be.
The boys at Echo are going to be really interested in trying to figure out what this means.
Situated on a gangwalk, they had the entire massed Thulian barracks below them. It appeared that the Thulians weren't very conscious of the importance of interior layout. Thousands of trooper suits were lined up, mixed in with the open-air living quarters.
A ranger isn't going to like this, Yogi. You going to steal their picnic baskets?
Something like that, Vic.
Emergency lighting came to life, and a loud, warbling klaxon sounded.
That's our cue.
The Thulians below had begun to scramble, readying weapons, getting into suits, and generally panicking.
Why is it that people never, ever look up?
John slung his rifle over his shoulder, readying himself.
Everyone stay behind me. Vic, kill the NVGs. We won't need them in a second.
The HUD went to standard. Vicky switched to Russian and then repeated in English for Mamona's benefit.
I can't flare screen with these things. You guys got face shields on? He's going to do a one-man arc light.
The rest of the team exchanged a look and snapped down their face shields, forgotten until now. John breathed once, deeply, closing his eyes, trying to relax and focus. Visualized what he needed to do. He was going to try something he had never tried before and wasn't quite sure what would happen. He felt the fires and they came freely. It started along his arms, racing down his hands. He breathed again and opened his eyes. The fires rippled outwards from his arms, covering the distance to the closest Nazis in an instant, mushrooming out from the center point that was himself. The entire room, as big as several stadiums, filled with flames in seconds, billowing and animate clouds of fire seeking victims. The firestorm rocketed across the floor. Every unsuited Thulian was instantly burned alive, screaming. Explosions rang out, exposed and storaged munitions cooking off. John felt the fire feeding off of him, bleeding it dry, but he had to keep it going, had to take out as many of them as possible, had to make it count.
Holy crap!
Almost as quickly as the fires had erupted, a thin sheet of rock fragments cascaded down from the ceiling, and in a few moments had melded together to make a shield between the rest of the team and the fires.
Warn a girl next time!
Before John could reply to her, a stabbing pain shot through his chest and his vision flared white from the trauma. John's fires abruptly gave out, and he coughed up a gout of blood, falling to his knees. Mamona bent down to help him, but he waved her off, snatching his rifle from his back.
"Take out the suits, before they figure out what happened."
John was pale, sweating and shaking, but he managed to raise his rifle.
"Weapons free. Take him down."
Vicky stared in horrified fascination at the carnage under the walkway. She'd expected something big. What John had unleashed was epic. Fire and brimstone raining down, apocalypse on a small scale, if a cavern the size of 5 football fields could be considered small. The backblast alone would have taken down the team if she hadn't shielded them. She could magically feel the barrier shake with the impact of the superheated air coming from the firestorm.
"This is it. This is going to kill him. It's killing him now. They have to get out."
She dropped her control on the shield, the steaming fragments fell apart and rained off the walkway. John was the first to open fire, prone on the walkway. The rest of the team soon followed suit, with Bear firing off plasma blasts next to his PPSH. The remaining troopers, their numbers drastically reduced, were cut to ribbons. Not a one had a time to return fire, and those that were out of range were still busy recovering.
"All right, people. Go, go, go. You don't need to finish this bunch off. They're toast."
When they hesitated, she added,
"What? Are you waiting for the caviar and vodka to go with the toast? I said go!"
Untermensch and Mamona helped John to his feet, after which he shook them off. The team ran for the exit, rifles at the ready.
"Just because you're paranoid, that does not mean that they are not out to get you."
If Vicky had a motto by which she lived her life, that was it. So besides everything else, she had sensor balls peppered all over the edges of the battlefield, looking for anything weird. and she was not particularly surprised when 10 of them went off at once, all in a far corner, where there wasn't supposed to be a hangar door. Well, it wasn't a hangar door. It was bigger, much bigger than a hangar door, even by Thulian standards. She zoomed in cameras as the sheet of rock face slid up. "Oh, no," she whispered. "Oh, no. Oh, hell no." It was an orb, but it wasn't like any orb she had ever seen before. There were no tentacle ports, no weapons ports, just a single slit that bisected the entire thing. A slit that began to glow a deep and ominous, sickly yellow-green. "Overwatch, command, speed dial, Mom," she snapped, her hands flying over the keys. "Command, speed dial, school." "Just because you're paranoid, you need to have contingencies." "Gray, packets."
"On it."
Her familiar sat poised over the boxes of USB packets. Both phones were answered on the first ring, almost simultaneously. "It's bad."
"Roger," said Moira Naj crisply, and "we have your back, honey," drawled the head of the Didanan School for Talented Teens.
"Gray, plug in Mom and Charlotte." The familiar pawed through the boxes, then delicately extracted two. He picked them up one at a time with raccoon-like hands and plugged them into USB slots on a hub at his own eye level.
"Command, phone, disconnect."
She cut the calls off. This was her backup. There was no way she would have enough strength all by herself to even dent a regular orb, much less that thing. And paranoid meant prepared, so she had contacted her old school and her mother to put together, well, call them magical power supplies. Two circles of magicians, one headed by her mother in Washington, and one at the end of Hudson Bay in Canada at the school, stood ready to feed her magic power. She was connected by blood to her mother's, and by 4 years of living and working at the school, and most of the teachers there would be in that circle. 30 seconds had passed, and the glow at that slit was increasing as it rose out of the bay. She panned the cameras, looking for the nearest person she had a packet for. It happened to be someone who was already flat on the field, bleeding into the soil. Good enough.
"Gray, I need Gavat."
"Got it."
Gray plugged in another packet. She flew a stealthed ball over to the thing and set it down on the top and hoped they wouldn't notice. It had been 45 seconds since the hangar door opened.
"Command, open. Hammer freak. Command, ping hammer."
She spared a glance for the Angel Flight countdown and cursed. They were too close for an abort, but she warned them anyway.
"Angels, birds, danger. Big bad bogey on the ground."
The response from Space Command came gratifyingly quickly.
"Roger, Overwatch. Got a sitch?"
She fed her cam to Air Force Space Command just as Angel Flight came over. A sheet of energy sliced out of the slit and started angling up to the sky, disintegrating everything on the way as the Thulians tried to target the fighters. She nearly sobbed with relief as they managed to pull straight up and out of range. The response from Space Command was unprintable. The orb rotated down again. The glow dimmed. Evidently this thing had a warm-up and a cool-down. But a turret on the bottom popped out, and something like a dish scanned the field. There was an Echo Meta, cyber-something. He was a multiple amputee, one of the Echo Op 2s pulled out of the wreckage after the invasion that had been fitted with a prototype prosthesis, some kind of powered armor. He was at the very outskirts of the fighting, taking on 5 troopers by himself. The orb's dish centered on him, and a nearly invisible, sickly yellow beam shot out from it, connecting with the Meta's back. Vicky recognized what had happened almost as soon as the beam connected. Selective EMP weapon. The color must just have been ambient bleed over into the visible. The armor pretty much froze in place. The Meta's head jerked around frantically, his body no longer moving at all. He didn't have time to scream, being torn apart by several Thulian energy cannons in the next instant. She swallowed down her nausea.
"Bastards. Focus, girl, focus. More people will die if you don't.
I'm about to open the ground under them. I want you to hit them and keep hitting them until you run out of rocks." She sent them the exact grid GPS coordinates she was getting from her little probe.
"Roger that."
"Fire from my mark, fire for effect. Mark." Absently, she heard the countdown start. She took her hands off her controls and narrowed her concentration. This was going to take everything she had, and then some.
She gathered magical energy to her, from the earth, from the two circles, from herself. She muttered under her breath an archaic Celtic chant she had learned from her mother, while in her mind ever-changing strings of numbers, formulas, and diagrams glowed. But most of all, it was will, the will of an expertly trained mage imposing itself on the world. Not just willpower, this was the ability to focus in the way that a laser-piercing diamond is focused, and to hold that focus for as long as it took. The energies gathered until she felt she would burst, trying to hold it all inside of herself. And as the count reached zero, she wrenched at the earth beneath the sphere. It didn't happen immediately. The earth groaned and shook, for she had never done anything this big before. Stationary cameras shook with the rumble of the localized earthquake, and in some places the combat ground to a halt as people fought for footing. Sweat streamed down her face. Magic was like telekinesis in a way. It worked best on small things. Big things like this, it felt as if she was trying to tear the earth apart with her bare hands. Now people had noticed the new sphere. The Thulians took heart from its appearance and renewed their already effective attacks, while her freaks hummed with curses in English and Russian and a few other languages. She ignored them all. This had to work. The earth split with a groan and a rumble in a crevasse big enough to swallow the sphere. A fraction of a second later, the hammer came down. Huge clouds of earth and rock shot up into the air from the first two strikes. The aiming system wasn't perfect and had a harder time with small moving objects. The third, however, hit the orb directly. It didn't even dent it. A force field flared around it, absorbing the damage. But not all the kinetic energy. The hammer pounded the sphere into the bottom of her crevasse. She opened another, deeper, just in time for another hammer. And again. And again. Her entire world narrowed to that spot of Earth's crust, and the orb being pounded into it, buried by the near strikes, pounded deeper by the direct ones. The entire area shook from the impacts. They were only using their intermediate projectiles compared to heavy artillery. Dust choked through the battlefield, cutting visibility down. She could still see muzzle flashes and energy cannons and muted explosions. Sweat soaked her clothing, her hands clenched the arms of her chair, and there was a roaring in her ears. Again. And again. Each time the hammer fell, it drove the orb deeper into the earth. Each time she opened the earth further, she felt strength pouring out of her. But she couldn't, daren't stop now. She could hardly see, scarcely breathe, when faintly, through the roaring, she heard Space Command say,
"Hammer terminated. It's burned out. We're inoperative. Good luck, Overwatch. Space Command out."
Using the very last of her strength, she brought the sides of the half-mile-deep hole crashing inward. Then, she passed out. Bella's jaw dropped as she watched the feed from the cams.
How the hell is she?
Somehow Vicky and Hammer were pounding that mega orb into the ground like a tent peg. She heard Space Command signed out. There was a last shaking that dropped some of the combatants to their knees, and a huge plume of dirt and dust erupted from the hole. Before Bella could react, even to call Vicky, she heard a pounding on the bulletproof glass door to the balcony outside her office. She looked up. It was Sarah, and she instantly knew that Vicky was down and needed them. She slapped the door control and vaulted over her desk, reaching the door just as it opened. Sarah seized her in arms that were 100 times stronger than they looked, and shot up into the sky in a plume of fire. The angel flew like a missile, straight up and straight down. They landed on the roof of the apartment building, and Bella wrenched open the access door and raced down the stairs four at a time. She already had Vicky's keys in her hand, but the Seraphim, speeding behind her, gestured, and the door flew open just as she got there. So did the door to Vicky's Overwatch room.
"Take over for her. I will tend her."
That was not Bella's first instinct, but she obeyed the Seraphim without an argument, flinging herself into the chair. Things were already going south for the infill teams. Echo 1 was well behind cover when Natalia gave the order. "Fire! Sections 2, 3! Fire, fire, fire!" The Nazis, being pressed with a large number of missiles and grenades, had taken up the only defensible cover positions from their direction of approach. With the planning that had gone on prior to this operation, the Commissar had seen to it that every spot was properly accommodating for the Fascista.
claymore mines, modern oversized flame fugasses, and anti-tank mines, all daisy-chained together, went up in fantastic explosions, with waves of flame and shrapnel sweeping through the Nazi ranks.
Weapons free, all squads, commence firing!
Even more rockets and grenades streaked towards the troopers and Nazi orbs. The first few waves of troopers were torn to shreds, blown to pieces by the planted explosives or launched munitions. Those from her squads with the capability used their powers from a distance, with varying levels of effectiveness. The Nazis renewed their ranks, with hundreds of the hulking monsters trudging toward the Echo and CCCP positions. There were plenty of bodies to soak up the punishment. Xavier had a fleeting recollection of little Fei Li dancing among the troopers in Red Square, her sword flashing, reflecting the light from the fires, with an uncanny resemblance to a miniature lightning bolt. Secretly, her heart ached, and she wished that her old friend were here beside her. Just as quickly as the thoughts had come, she swept them away.
"Commence Le Gong bombardment,"
she said, bitterly reciting the code name she had personally chosen. The commissar heard the dull thwump of mortars being fired. She kept her eyes fixed on the Thulian positions. They had begun firing their energy cannons, destroying at least two of the southern ridge rocket positions. She bit her lip and concentrated, pushing back the anguish at seeing even more comrades dying.
This is war now. A real war.
The mortars exploded, detonating 2 dozen meters above the Thulians. Hundreds of thousands of what looked like white, shiny streamers covered the battlefield. The streamers, only as thick as a ribbon, adhered to the troopers and the landscape around them.
Trigger Tianyu. Mark!
As per the plan, they had set up several very, very expensive and increasingly rare echo-broadcast energy generators in the valley. They were used, primarily, to power localized defensive shields and some of the weapons that the Commissar had commissioned for this operation. Now, the output for the broadcasters ramped up. This was one of Tesla's gifts, an experimental weapon in short supply.
Let's see how the fascista like this.
The streamers, now affixed seemingly harmlessly to nearly all of the entrenched Thulian troopers, were all high-efficiency conductors, specifically tuned to the frequency of the echo-broadcast generators. Most of the Thulian troopers were cooked in their suits. Some even exploded, blown apart by gigavolts of electricity. Dozens of her own soldiers commenced fire. The main part of the Nazi force were still standing and untouched by their secret electric mortars, and returned their fire. There were some patches, however, where the Nazis were being cut down with suspicious ease. Xavier frowned. At the battle in Red Square, they were impermeable to damage until they were heated to the glowing point. Here, and there, mere rifle fire and rocket fire were taking them down, without the Krieger armor having been made vulnerable prior. For a moment, she suspected some trickery. Fake suits with nothing in them? But no, they were writhing and dying there. She pulled down a visor, ignored until now.
Overwatch,
she said in a commanding voice.
Da, Commissar.
It was Gamayun, not Vicky, that answered.
I'm seeing odd patches where fascista are taking great damage for no reason.
Checking now.
There was a mixed babble of Russian with a touch of English as the Gamayun consulted with someone on another channel. Xavier's visor lit up with the battlefield overlay.
This where you're talking about?
The patches glowed with red light.
Da.
Those places are within 500 yards of an echo broadcast unit. Each one.
Before the Commissar could ponder this revelation, the Thulians made a push. They were moving forward and taking heavy casualties, but with so many hundreds of them, they could afford to. She made a snap decision.
Molotov, chug Soviet on me! Dave, 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 comrades!
Sestra is wise for field commander to put on head on chopping block, Molotov mocked. Then again, he's not much of a wise head up for the chopping.
Commissar, Soviet interjected. I'll be in Canada back to police wounded.
An explosion punctuated her sentence.
They are accumulating many.
Da, fine. Rest of you, dave!
The Commissar broke from cover, leaping over and then kicking off of the large boulder that she'd previously been using for cover. She flew straight for a point where she'd intercept the Thulians. They wouldn't be expecting a charge to counter their own.
Savior shot a powerful blast at the nearest cluster of three Thulians. It exploded the ground in front of them in a marvelous shower of hot gravel and dust. Molochuk had bounded nimbly down after her. He speared through the air, tumbling into a group of Thulian troopers. Coming up in a roll, he immediately began to chop, punch, kick, and elbow at them. His super-strong body, his metahuman gift combined with years of unparalleled martial arts expertise, began to cut through and knock down the armored suits. Chug plodded after his comrades, bellowing his rage at the foes that had hurt his friends in Moscow. The rock man inelegantly smashed into the Thulians, hammering them with his fists. The commissar had to look twice when she saw him literally rip one in half, breaking the suit over his knee and ripping top from bottom. Both halves spurted blood, sparks, and hydraulic fluid into the desert soil. Confusion played over his craggy face for a moment before he bellowed again and moved on to the next foe.
Of course, they are within 500 yards of a broadcaster.
Savior kicked off into the air again, charging her fist with her own dangerous metahuman energy. She caved in a Thulian helmet with a satisfying crunch of crushed metal and bone. The Nazi clunked to the ground like a sack of hammers, utterly dead. The commissar stole a glance over her shoulder. Soviet dashed from behind a boulder half-covered in flaming debris, deftly jumping between metahuman combatants. One of the rocket teams from the ridge was still alive. Jadwiga wove her way through the fighting as if she was merely running an obstacle course, dodging explosions and energy cannon fire, stopping short of a knot of Thulian suits, and then running again to miss being crushed by a Nazi trooper. Savior stopped, staring, her mouth falling slightly open with disbelief. Sovi reached the barely moving metahuman, hooked her hands under his arms, and began to drag him to cover. It was one of the most amazing displays of bravery that Natalia had ever seen from anyone, let alone from her friend and comrade Soviet. Not wasting any time to dwell on the miraculous feat, Savior screamed a hellish battle cry and launched herself at another pair of Nazis, fists charged with more destructive energy. Movement on the screen caught Verdigris' attention. He glanced at it sharply. The Seraphim was on the balcony outside Belladonna's office. There was a brief flash of blue beside the fire. Then both of them were gone, shooting straight up like a missile, moving too fast for the camera to track. He could only stare at the monitor and grit his teeth.
You have been listening to Season 7 of the Secret World Chronicle podcast novel series. The Secret World Chronicle podcast is narrated and produced by Veronica Jaguer. Music is Exciting Trailer by Kevin MacLeod, available at Incompetech.com. The Secret World Chronicle is published by the amazing people at Bayon Books. Follow the series at www.secretworldchronicle.com. Join us on Facebook and check out the authors on Twitter. And as always, thank you for listening.